The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, apologies for being slightly late. How are you doing?
The Torah of Moadim L'Simcha. Is it a done thing for you to ask Louis questions, really? I don't think that works, does it?
No, it definitely, exactly. It definitely doesn't
anyway,
work.
Sukkot in Israel yesterday was the regular Birkat HaKohanim, the priestly blessing at the Kotel. Almost 100,000 people turned up to watch the Kohanim bless the nation and to bless the people who were there. It's one of those things that I think should be on people's bucket list. Really, I do. I think it's one of those amazing, amazing experiences that you've got to experience at least once. You've got two options, opportunities every year, Chol HaMoed Pesach and Chol HaMoed Sukkot, that the Birkat HaKohanim takes place. And of course, yesterday with the Lulavim and Etrogim and the four species to go with it, it's really quite an amazing experience. And of course, just to add to that, players from Maccabi Tel Aviv were waving their lulavim before their big game tonight. Today they're playing a European game against Red Star Belgrade. They were at their final practice yesterday with their lulav and their etrog, making brachot ahead of their game. An interesting way to prepare for a big game.
Incredible. Absolutely. I have been there a number of times, and it is just the most phenomenal, phenomenal experience. All right, coalition update. Any changes?
Yes. Some conflicting reports coming out of the coalition discussions yesterday. First of all, we hear that Prime Minister Netanyahu has convinced, and we use the word convinced relatively loosely because it depends on who you're reading as to whether it was the fact that they were convinced or perhaps even forced, but he managed to convince his potential coalition partners, the right-wing bloc, the ultra-orthodox parties, and those who would join potentially into a coalition with the Likud. Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday convinced them to sign a document saying that they will not enter into a coalition under Benny Gantz and the Kahol Levan leadership. So they've said that if the mandate is passed over to Kahol Levan, as has been widely expected, that those parties who had agreed to sit in a coalition with Prime Minister Netanyahu will not cross the floor in order to give Benny Gantz and Kahol Levan the possible opportunity to form a government. So Prime Minister Netanyahu effectively trying to put a block in place to prevent Gantz from forming government. That was what we heard earlier on in the day yesterday. Then reports coming out saying that potentially the formation of a unity government with the mandate still under Prime Minister Netanyahu's control, the possible formation of government became closer, because it seems as if though, and if we believe the reports that are coming out, it seems as if though Benny Gantz is potentially moving towards the suggestion that was made by President Ruvi Rivlin in order for a unity government to be formed. And from what I can understand from President Rivlin's suggestion to the two leaders, he suggested that Prime Minister Netanyahu effectively take over the role as a prime minister, but that he effectively freezes his position in order to take care of these legal issues. And even though there will not be another prime minister in his place, a deputy prime minister type of person will be in place to run the country at that time, and to effectively take control of things while Netanyahu takes care of his legal things. And then in the event that his legal position is clarified and that he comes out without any legal charges against him, he will then reassume his role as prime minister. And if not, then he will relinquish the role as prime minister. So it seems very, very convoluted. And it seems something that we've never, ever experienced before, where effectively we have a person who is not the prime minister who is running the country. But within that suggestion have come a whole lot of different questions about at what point will they require Netanyahu to actually resign from being prime minister. In other words, what will be the trigger in the legal process to require him to resign? Who will reside in the prime minister's residence during the time that we have a prime minister who's not acting as a prime minister? So there seem to be a lot of technical issues around that. And it seems a very, very complex suggestion that has come from the president in order to somehow try to force a solution. But from what we've understood from the latest reports, Benny Gantz might be moving closer to agreeing something along these lines than was the case before. And so some of the reports are coming out saying that a unity government now seems closer than it ever was before. To me, it sounds very, very complex, and I don't know exactly how such a suggestion can be implemented. I guess that's not for people like me to work out. In the meantime, I'm still remaining quite skeptical as to whether this solution can really work or not.
Certainly we haven't had anything positive to base a positive feeling on around this. So we're just not seeing it getting any closer, I think, to resolution.
Yeah. I mean, I think that ultimately, you know, as time goes on, the leaders involved understand that we are moving closer to a third election and further away from possibly forming a government. And by the way, a third election is not going to produce anything new. And that's really the frustrating thing about all of this, is that, you know, we've already had two elections. We're already back in the same situation as we were after the first election. Why would we think that a third election would change anything?
Absolutely right. There's certainly no reason. They've got to find a way to solve this, and they've got to put ego aside and compromise accordingly. All right, can we just talk about U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo? He's assured Israeli officials that the U.S. withdrawal from Syria does not endanger Israel in any way. How can he make the statement with such confidence, Anthony?
Well, I think I don't think he can, but I think he wants to sound confident. I think he wants to try to reassure Israel that the U.S. actions are not endangering Israel in any way. And of course, the U.S. is treading a very, very fine line here, between, what's happening in Syria in terms of what the U.S. interests are, in terms of what the Kurdish interests are in Syria, in terms of what the Russian and Turkish interests might be in Syria, and of course what the Israeli interests are. And we understand that Mike Pompeo is heading to Jerusalem to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu after he will visit Ankara today. He's off to Turkey to meet with President Erdogan in Turkey, in order to try to convince the Turkish government to stop their attacks against the Kurds. And also, in parallel with all of these activities, has been this letter that has been released, written by President Trump to Turkish President Erdogan, a very fascinating and interesting direct letter. And I think it's worth reading for those people who are interested in understanding how the Trump administration works and how President Trump tries to convince people that they need to toe the line. And President Trump has said, on the one hand, he's tried to convince President Erdogan that history will judge him positively if he refrains from carrying out these actions, and history will judge him very negatively if he carries on with these attacks. And of course, then putting out the carrot in order to encourage Erdogan, saying that the U.S. government will make all kinds of concessions in order to help the Turkish economy, but also threatening that if need be, Trump will go against his better judgment and will force sanctions upon Turkey, and in so doing may well help to ruin the Turkish economy, actually uses those words. So a fascinating letter. But the point is that there's a lot of pressure on Israel at the moment with regard to what's happening in Syria. And ironically, the pressure comes from within Israel, and particularly from within the Rabbanut, in fact, who have said that Israel has a responsibility to protect the Kurds against those attacks from the Turkish government. And so this is an entirely different kind of angle that Israel is being forced, a different corner that Israel is being forced into, because there are so many people who have the view that Israel has some responsibility to help the Kurds where they've been effectively abandoned by the U.S. government. The Turkish forces are already attacking. There have already been civilian deaths and deaths of Kurdish fighters reported in that area. And so the whole situation is really, really nasty. And I don't yet understand why Israel would want to intervene. I think it would be contrary to Israel's best interests and better judgment to intervene. But apparently the U.S. administration is extremely sensitive to what Israel might do in response. And this is why apparently Mike Pompeo will be here later this week or over the weekend after he visits Turkey today. In order to try to convince Israel that America has not abandoned Israeli interests and that even though the U.S. is withdrawing from that area in Syria, that this doesn't necessarily mean that Israel is being weakened in its security. And obviously, Israel will reinforce its security along the northern border where necessary, will take action as Israel has been known to do up until now, even if it means that action is being taken within Syrian territory in order to avoid attacks on the Israeli border. Israel will certainly not hesitate and will not shy away from doing that. But there is an awful lot of sensitivity going on around the whole action at the moment. And it's going to be interesting to see how all of this pans out over the next week or two.
Absolutely. It will. It will. And it's an unfortunate note to end the session on, but one of the members of the family that was struck by lightning has passed away. Terrible, terrible story.
Very terrible story. This is 14-year-old Asher Hazut, who was with his family picnicking on the Zikim beach in the area of Ashkelon the day before yesterday, when out of nowhere we had this thunder and lightning storm, and the lightning struck the family, and Asher was very, very badly injured. He was a student at a yeshiva, and apparently his family were quite close to the Shas party. The Shas party have put out an official notification of condolences to the family. But in addition to 14-year-old Asher, two of his brothers and a sister were also injured in this attack, and the wife of one of his other brothers also injured in this attack. I mean, the lightning literally targeted the area that family were located in, and just they happened to go out for a Sukkot outing, and this is what happened to them, a very, very tragic event indeed. And of course, our condolences go to that family while the others recover, and we wish them all a speedy recovery. But of course, the question is, you know, could the weather forecasters have potentially helped to predict this forecast? I mean, I'll be honest and tell you that I was caught out by the rain that suddenly came down. The forecast showed, I think, something like a 10% possibility of rain, which in Israel means it's not going to rain for the next week or two. And all of a sudden, there was literally a thunderstorm and quite a heavy rain. The Yoreh, the first rain of the season, came, and of course accompanied with thunder and lightning. So the question is whether, you know, the forecasters may have done a better job to warn people of the weather conditions, and whether that might not have saved the life of this young boy. We can speculate about that, but unfortunately the reality remains with us.
Yeah, and I think unlikely. That's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. You have a Shabbat Shalom, a Chag Sameach, and then, of course, we'll only be back with you on Wednesday morning of next week.
Shabbat Shalom, Chag Sameach, and we'll talk about Simchat Torah after the event.